Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we visit the Arabian Peninsula. The Arabian Peninsula is a piece of land in southwestern Asia. It is the original homeland of the Arab people and the birthplace of the religion of Islam. The country of Saudi Arabia takes up about 4/5 of the peninsula, which also includes Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Yemen, Bahrain, and parts of Jordan and Iraq. For further information about the Arabian Peninsula for children, I suggest kidsbritannica.com. Our first tale is all about magic and has an odd twist to it at the end. Here is Fortune and the Woodcutter. Several hundreds of years ago, there lived in a forest a woodcutter and his wife and children. He was very poor, having only his axe to depend on and 2 mules to carry the wood he cut to the neighboring town. But he worked hard and was always out of bed by 5 o'clock, summer and winter. This went on for 20 years, and though his sons were now grown up and they went with their father to the forest, everything seemed to go against them, and they remained as poor as ever. In the end, the woodcutter lost heart and said to himself, "What's the good of working like this if I never am a penny richer at the end? I shall go to the forest no more, and perhaps if I take to my bed and don't run after fortune, one day she may come to me." So the next morning he did not get up, and when 6 o'clock struck, his wife, who had been cleaning the house, went to see what was the matter. "Are you ill?" she asked wonderingly, surprised at not finding him dressed. "The cock has crowed ever so often. It's high time for you to get up." "Why should I get up?" asked the man without moving. "Why? To go to the forest, of course." "Yes, and when I've toiled all day, I can hardly earn enough to give us 1 meal."
"But what can we do, my poor husband?" said she. "It is just a trick of fortune's, who would never smile upon us."
"Well, I've had my fill of fortune's tricks," cried he. "If she wants me, she can find me here, but I have done with the wood forever."
"My dear husband, grief has driven you mad. Do you think fortune will come to anybody who does not go after her? Dress yourself and saddle the mules and begin your work. Do you know that there is not a morsel of bread in the house?"
"I don't care if there isn't, and I'm not going to the forest. It's no use your talking. Nothing will make me change my mind."
The distracted wife begged and implored in vain. Her husband persisted in staying in bed, and at last, in despair, she left him and went back to her work. An hour or two later, a man came from the nearest village, knocked at the door, and when she opened it, he said to her,
"Good morning, mother. I have got a job to do, and I want to know if your husband will lend me your mules, as I see he is not using them, and can lend me a hand himself."
"He's upstairs. You'd better ask him," answered the woman, and the man went up and repeated the request.
"I'm sorry, neighbor, but I have sworn not to leave my bed, and nothing will make me break my vow."
"Well, then, will you lend me your 2 mules? I will pay you something for them."
"Certainly, neighbor. Take them, and welcome."
So the man left the house, and leading the mules from the stable, placed 2 sacks on their backs and drove them to a field where he had found a hidden treasure. He filled the sacks with the money, though he knew perfectly well that it belonged to the Sultan, and was driving them quietly home again when he saw 2 soldiers coming along the road. Now the man was aware that if he was caught, he would be condemned to death. So he fled back into the forest. The mules, left to themselves, took the path that led to their master's stable. The woodcutter's wife was looking out of the window when the mules drew up before the door, so heavily laden that they almost sank under their burdens. She lost no time in calling her husband, who was still lying in bed.
"Quick, quick, get up as fast as you can. Our 2 mules have returned with sacks on their backs, so heavily laden with something or other that the poor beasts can hardly stand up."
"Wife, I've told you 1,000 times already that I'm not going to get up. Why can't you leave me in peace?" As she found she could get no help from her husband, the woman took a large knife and cut the cords which bound the sacks onto the animals' backs. They fell at once to the ground, and out poured a rain of gold pieces till the little courtyard shone like the sun. "A treasure!" gasped the woman, as soon as she could speak from surprise. "A treasure!" And she ran off to tell her husband. "Get up! Get up!" she cried. "You were quite right not to go to the forest and to await fortune in your bed. She has come at last. Our mules have returned home, laden with all the gold in the world, and it is now lying in the court. No one in the whole country can be as rich as we are." In an instant, the woodcutter was on his feet and running to the court, where he paused, dazzled by the glitter of the coins which lay around him. "You see, my dear wife, that I was right," he said at last. "Fortune is so capricious. You can never count on her. Run after her, and she is sure to fly from you. Stay still, and she's sure to come." The next story is one of enchantment, inheritance, and magic. It is called The Story of the Young King of the Black Isles. There once was a mighty sultan who had the misfortune to have no children. One day, traveling along the ocean, he came upon a fisherman. The two struck up a pleasant conversation, whereupon the fisherman, bowing low before the sultan, said the following: "O great sultan, you have been most convivial with such a humble fisherman. I would tell you about an amazing story I have heard, as it will be unbelievable to you by the fact that it was told to me by a fish. I will nevertheless relate it, for truly it offers an incredible adventure for one like you. Do you see yonder the lake and four black mountains? They once were the Black Isles. It was in that lake that I caught the fish who told me its story. There dwells an evil enchantress and a young man who is in great need of rescue. He ruled over a wealthy country before his enchantment, and his subjects were all turned into fish. Now he is ruler of nothing, and is frozen in place there on the top of the largest of the four mountains, half turned into stone." The sultan thanked the humble fisherman and determined to see for himself. To this end, leaving his retinue behind, he rode towards the Black Mountains across a desert plain under cover of a moonless night in order to avoid detection by the evil enchantress who dwelt there. Arriving before dawn, he carefully tied his horse to a tree and climbed to the top of the tallest mountain. He saw a great and beautiful palace halfway up the mountain and concealed himself from the possible view of anyone who looked in the direction of the black boulders over which he made his way. Carefully, he picked his way to the top, and late in the afternoon he arrived. It did not take him long to see that there was indeed a man sitting on a stony outcropping, looking out over the plain he had just crossed to the sea. And the young man, half turning, greeted the sultan with a whisper, "Be careful, you are come to the place where an evil enchantress dwells. Look upon my miserable self and see that I am frozen here, half turned into stone. If you value your life, you must leave immediately." But the sultan was not to be dissuaded. He insisted that the young man tell him his story, nor would he leave before the tale was told. With a sigh, the young man related the following: "You must know, sire, that my father was Mahmud, the king of this country. The Black Isles, so called from the four little mountains which were once islands, while the capital was the place where now the great lake lies. My story will tell you how these changes came about. My father died when he was 66, and I succeeded him. I married my queen, whom I loved tenderly, and I thought she loved me too. But one afternoon, when I was half asleep and was being fanned by two of her maids, I heard one say to the other, 'What a pity it is that our mistress no longer loves our master. I believe she would like to kill him if she could, for she is an enchantress.' I soon found out by watching that they were right, and when I mortally wounded a favorite slave of hers for a great crime, she begged that she might build a palace in the garden, where she wept and bewailed him for 2 years. At last I begged her to cease grieving for him, for although he could not speak or move, by her enchantments She had just kept him alive. She turned upon me in a rage and said over me some magic words, and I instantly became, as you see me now, half man and half marble. Then the wicked enchantress changed the capital, which was a very populous and flourishing city, into the lake and desert plain you saw. The fish of four colors which are in it are the different races who lived in the town. The four hills are the four islands which gave the name to my kingdom. All this the enchantress told me to add to my troubles. And this is not all. Every day she comes and beats me with a whip of buffalo hide. When the young king had finished his sad story, he burst once more into tears, and the sultan was much moved. "Tell me," he cried, "where is this wicked woman, and where is this miserable object of her affection, and whom she just manages to keep alive?" "Where she lives, I do not know," answered the unhappy prince, "but she goes every day at sunrise to see if the slave can yet speak to her after she has beaten me." "Unfortunate king," said the sultan, "I will do what I can to avenge you." So he consulted with the young king over the best way to bring this about, and they agreed their plan should be put in effect the next day. The sultan then rested, and the young king gave himself up to happy hopes of release. The next day the sultan arose and then went to the palace he had seen the day before. He went in the garden and found the slave, lying like one dead, yet still breathing. He drew his sword and destroyed the little life that remained in him, and then threw the body down a well. He then lay down on the couch where the slave had been and waited for the enchantress. He did not have long to wait. She came to the room where she thought her wounded slave was, but where the sultan really lay. She came near to the couch and said, "Are you better today, my dear slave? Speak but one word to me." "How can I be better," answered the sultan, "when I can never sleep for the cries and groans of your husband?" "What joy to hear you speak," answered the queen. "Do you wish him to regain his proper shape?" "Yes," said the sultan. "Hasten to set him at liberty, so that I may no longer hear his cries." The queen at once went off and took a cup of water and said over it some words that made it boil as if it were on fire. Then she threw it over the prince, who at once regained his own form. He was filled with joy, but the enchantress said, "Hasten away from this place and never come back, lest I kill you." So he hid himself to see the end of the sultan's plan. The enchantress went back to the palace and said, "Now I have done what you wished." "What you have done," said the sultan, "is not enough to cure me. Every day at midnight, all the people whom you have changed into fish lift their heads out of the lake and cry for vengeance. Go quickly and give them their proper shape." The enchantress hurried away and said some words over the lake. The fish then became men, women, children, and the houses and shops were once more filled. The sultan's suite, who had encamped by the lake, were not a little astonished to see themselves in the middle of a large and beautiful town. As soon as she had disenchanted it, the queen went back to the palace. "Are you quite well now?" she said. "Come near," said the sultan, "nearer still." She obeyed. Then he sprang up, and with one blow of the sword he cut her in two. Then he went and found the prince. "Rejoice," he said. "Your cruel enemy is dead." The prince thanked him again and again. "And now," said the sultan, "I will go back to my capital, which I am glad to find is so near yours." "So near mine," said the king of the Black Isles. "Do you know it is a whole year's journey from here? You came here in a few hours because it was enchanted, but I will accompany you on your journey." "It will give me much pleasure if you will escort me," said the sultan, "and as I have no children, I will make you my heir." The sultan and the prince set out together, the sultan laden with rich presents from the king of the Black Isles. The day after he reached his capital, the sultan assembled his court and told them all that had befallen him, and told them how he intended to adopt the young king as his heir. And as far as the people, they rejoiced, and forever they lived happily. This last story stretches the imagination a bit, and I found it quite whimsical. Here is The Enchanted Head.
Once upon a time, an old woman lived in a small cottage near the sea with her two daughters. They were very poor, and the girls seldom left the house as they worked all day long, making veils for the ladies to wear over their faces. And every morning when the veils were finished, the mother took them over the bridge and sold them in the city. Then she bought the food that they needed for the day and returned home to do her share of the veil making. One morning the old woman rose even earlier than usual and set off for the city with her wares. She was just crossing the bridge when, suddenly, she knocked up against a human head, which she had never seen there before. The woman started back in horror, but what was her surprise when the head spoke, exactly as if it had a body joined onto it. "Take me with you, good mother," it said imploringly. "Take me with you back to your house." At the sound of these words, the poor woman nearly went mad with terror. Have that horrible thing always at home? Never, never! And she turned and ran back as fast as she could, not knowing that the head was jumping, dancing, and rolling after her. But when she reached her own door, it bounded in before her and stopped in front of the fire, begging and praying to be allowed to stay. All that day, there was no food in the house, for the veils had not been sold, and they had no money to buy anything with, so they all sat silent at their work, inwardly cursing the head, which was the cause of their misfortunes. When evening came and there was no sign of supper, the head spoke for the first time that day. "Good mother, does no one ever eat here? During all the hours I've spent in your house, not a creature has touched anything."
"No," answered the old woman, "we're not eating anything."
"And why not, good mother?"
"Because we have no money to buy any food."
"Is it your custom never to eat?"
"No, for every morning I go into the city to sell my veils, and with the few shillings I get for them, I buy all we want. Today I didn't cross the bridge, so of course I had nothing for food."
"Then I am the cause of your having gone hungry all day?" asked the head.
"Yes, you are," answered the old woman.
"Well then, I will give you money, and plenty of it. You will only do as I tell you. In an hour, as the clock strikes 12, you must be on the bridge at the place where you met me. When you get there, call out, 'Ahmed,' 3 times as loud as you can. Then a man will appear, and you must say to him, 'The head, your master, desires you to open the trunk and to give me the green purse which you will find in it.'"
"Very well, my lord," said the old woman. "I will set off at once for the bridge." And wrapping her veil around her, she went out. Midnight was striking as she reached the spot where she had met the head so many hours before.
"Ahmed, Ahmed, Ahmed,"
cried she, and immediately a huge man as tall as a giant stood on the bridge before her.
"What do you want?" asked he.
"The head, your master, desires you to open the trunk and to give me the green purse which you will find in it."
"I will be back in a moment, good mother," said he,
and 3 minutes later he placed a purse full of sequins in the old woman's hand. No one can imagine the joy of the whole family at the sight of all this wealth. The tiny tumble-down cottage was rebuilt, the girls had new dresses, and their mother ceased selling veils. It was such a new thing to them to have money to spend that they were not as careful as they might have been, and by there was not a single coin left in the purse. When this happened, their hearts sank within them and their faces fell.
"Have you spent your fortune?" asked the head from the corner when it saw how sad they looked. "Well then, go at midnight, good mother, to the bridge and call out, 'Mahomet,' 3 times as loud as you can. A man will appear in answer, and you must tell him to open the trunk and to give you the red purse which he will find there." The old woman did not need twice telling, but set off at once for the bridge.
"Mahomet, Mahomet, Mahomet,"
cried she with all her might, and in an instant a man, still larger than the last, stood before her.
"What do you want?" asked he.
"The head, your master, bids you open the trunk, and to give me the red purse which you will find in it."
"Very well, good mother, I will do so,"
answered the man, and the moment after he had vanished he reappeared with the purse in his hand. This time, the money seemed so endless that the old woman built herself a new house
and filled it with the most beautiful things that were to be found in the shops. Her daughters were always wrapped in veils that looked as if they were woven out of sunbeams, and their dresses shone with precious stones. The neighbors wondered where all this sudden wealth had sprung from, but nobody knew about the head.
"Good mother," said the head one day, "this morning you are to go to the city and ask the Sultan to give me his daughter for my bride."
"Do what?" asked the old woman in amazement. "How can I tell the Sultan that a head without a body wishes to become his son-in-law? They will think that I'm mad, and I shall be booted from the palace and stoned by the children."
"Do as I bid you," replied the head. "It is my will."
The old woman was afraid to say anything more, and putting on her richest clothes, started for the palace. The Sultan granted her an audience at once, and in a trembling voice she made her request.
"Are you mad, old woman?" said the Sultan, staring at her.
The wooer is powerful, O Sultan, and nothing is impossible to him."
"Then let him show his power by doing three things, and I will give him my daughter. Do you see that hill in front of the palace?" asked the Sultan. "Well, in 40 days, the man who has sent you must make that hill vanish and plant a beautiful garden in its place. That is the first thing. Now go and tell him what I say."
So the old woman returned and told the head the Sultan's first condition.
"It is well," he replied, and said no more about it.
For 39 days the head remained in its favorite corner. The old woman thought that the task set before was beyond his powers, and that no more would be heard about the Sultan's daughter. But on the 39th evening, after her visit to the palace, the head suddenly spoke.
"Good mother," he said, "you must go tonight to the bridge, and when you are there, cry, 'Ali, Ali, Ali,' as loud as you can. A man will appear before you, and you will tell him that he is to level the hill and to make in its place the most beautiful garden that ever was seen."
"I will go at once," answered she. It did not take her long to reach the bridge which led to the city, and she took up her position on the spot where she had first seen the head and called out loudly, "Ali, Ali, Ali." In an instant a man appeared before her of such a huge size that the old woman was half frightened, but his voice was mild and gentle as he said, "What is it that you want?"
"Your master bids you level the hill that stands in front of the Sultan's palace, and in its place to make the most beautiful garden in the world."
"Tell my master he shall be obeyed," replied Ali. "It shall be done this moment." And the old woman went away and gave Ali's message to the head. Meanwhile, the Sultan was in his palace waiting till the 40th day should dawn, and wondering that not one spadeful of earth should have been dug out of the hill. But when the next day came, there was no hill, and when the Sultan opened his eyes, he could not imagine why the room was so much lighter than usual, and what was the reason of the sweet smell of flowers that filled the air. So he rose and looked out, and underneath him, flowers from every part of the world were blooming, and creepers of every color hung in chains from tree to tree. Then he remembered.
"Certainly that old woman's son is a clever magician," cried he. "What shall I give him to do next? Let me think. Ah, I know." And he sent for the old woman, who by the orders of the head was waiting below. "Your son has carried out my wishes very nicely," he said. "The garden is larger and better than any of the other kings, but when I walk across it, I shall need some place to rest on the other side. In 40 days, he must build me a palace in which every room shall be filled with different furniture from a different country, and each more magnificent than any room that ever was seen." And having said this, he turned round and went away.
"Oh, he will never be able to do that," thought she. "It is much more difficult than the hill," and she walked home slowly with her head bent.
"Well, what am I to do next?" asked the head cheerfully, and the old woman told her story.
"Dear me, is that all? Why, it's child's play," answered the head, and he troubled no more about the palace for 39 days. Then he told the old woman to go to the bridge and call for Hassan.
"What do you want, old woman?" asked Hassan when he appeared, for he was not as polite as the others had been.
"Your master commands you to build the most magnificent palace that ever was seen," replied she, "and you are to place it on the borders of the new garden."
"He shall be obeyed," answered Hassan, and when the Sultan woke, he saw in the distance a palace built of soft blue marble, resting on slender pillars of pure gold.
"That old woman's son is certainly all-powerful," cried he. "What shall I bid him to do now?" And after thinking some time, he sent for the old woman who was expecting the summons.
"The garden is wonderful, the palace the finest in the world," said he. "I will assuredly give my daughter to the old woman's son. If I were to search all the world through, I could never find a more powerful son-in-law." And when the old woman entered his presence, he informed her that he was ready to fulfill his promise, and she was to bid her son appear at the palace without delay. The command did not at all please the old woman, though, of course, she made no objections to the Sultan.
"Ali, all has gone well so far," she grumbled, when she told her story to the head. "But what do you suppose the Sultan will say when he sees her daughter's husband?"
"Never mind what he says. Put me on a silver dish and carry me to the palace." So it was done, though the old woman's heart beat as she lay down the dish with the head upon it. At the sight before him, the king flew into a violent rage. "I will never marry my daughter to such a monster," he cried. But the princess placed her hand gently on his arm.
"You have given your word, my father, and you cannot break it," said she.
"But, my child, it is impossible for you to marry such a being," exclaimed the Sultan.
"Yes, I will marry him. He has a beautiful head, and I love him already."
So the marriage was celebrated, and great feasts were held in the palace, though the people wept tears to think of the sad fate of their beloved princess. But when the merrymaking was done, and the young couple were alone, the head suddenly disappeared, or rather, a body was added to it, and one of the handsomest young men that ever was seen stood before the princess. "A wicked fairy enchanted me at my birth," he said, "and for the rest of the world I must always be a head only. But for you, and you only, I am a man like other men."
"And that is all I care about," said the princess.
So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We're going to be hearing stories about holidays. Amazing holidays. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading.